The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning. Good morning. I invite us to take a moment, as the prelude plays, to start to center yourself, to start to come truly present here with yourself, with whatever helps you be ready for a time of worship. Bring who you are as you enter our church this morning. Bring your best self and your struggling self. Bring your mistakes and your triumphs. Bring your shortcomings and your recommitments to good. Bring yourself here and open your heart to beauty, to truth, to the door that is open to the presence of God. Here in this church, we are trying to walk together on the peaceable way, trying to hammer out division and hatred and all that separates one from another. We try, and we will fall short, but held in love, we try again. We come together this morning as a church to bow our heads in prayer, to raise our voices in song, to remember our promises and vow to live by them once again. Good morning and welcome to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I'm Reverend Andrew Weber, always happily nervous to be leading a community of ministers in worship. Unitarian Universalism is a faith put into action. And this is our theological sandbox here, where we come together to try to be our best selves, to try to live out our inner religion in concert with each other. We will try to live with care. We will try to live with vulnerability. We will fail, and we will try again. That is what our faith is, trying our best, being true to ourselves, trying our best again. So welcome to all of you who come here in person or via the wonder of technology to this community of beloved seekers. And I say we have an embodied faith, and oftentimes I try to embody that in what we are talking about in worship rather than just me talking. And so today, we are experiencing vulnerability, and so I'm going to ask that some of you embody that. So I need four people to come up here and help me with being a little vulnerable and help me with the chalice lighting. You can be any age. It helps if you can read, but you don't have to be able to. I can help you with that. So just four people. Yeah, come on forward. Great. Two more? Yeah, just come up, stand next to me. Oh, you're too much. Don't make eye contact with the ministry, he might call on you. There we go. Okay, how about one, two, three, four? I have four voices for reading, and we'll just use this microphone. Is this good? Great. Okay. Are you okay going first? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you read one, and then your brother will read two, and you can help him if he needs help, and then pass it behind you for three and four, and I'll do the one that says leader.
Okay. You who feel your heart is breaking, come in.
Come in.
You are confused and kind of come in.
You who are angry, in pain, or not wanting to be here, come in.
You who are hopeful and energized, come in.
Come into this community of your heart, where you have been held in love and in comfort, where you have shared your joy and your spirit, where you have asked questions because you felt they needed asking, where you have found a friendship and companions, where you have sometimes not agreed, and sometimes not felt comforted, and sometimes not felt heard.
Bring your broken heart and your grief, share them. When you're confusing and questions, share them.
Bring your anger and your pain, share them.
Bring your hope and your energy, share them.
For here in this place, we can be together. We can gather in all the conflicting emotions tumbling around in our heads and in our hearts. We bring them together here and lay them on the altar of community. For community means that fragile, not perfect human beings can come together in the name of peace and seek to find peace again.
Peace. Hope.
Healing.
May it be so.
Amen. Thank you all very much. Thank you. You can go back. At Thomas Paine, we light a second flame each Sunday, reminding of us of our hope and our challenge for peace, both inner peace and world peace. There will be responsive words on the screen. May peace be with us. Let us continue our coming into worship together as we sing together. You may rise in spirit and or in body as we do enter, rejoice, and come in. I'm going to share a story with us now. The pictures will be up on the screen, but if you want to come forward, you may, and that is for any and all ages. And there are actually, I'm going to have a separate, like two pools. You can come forward to see this. There are also friendship bracelet making happening in the back. So during the story, after the story, if you're like, I'm done with what he's saying, just go make some friendship bracelets. That's okay. Really, I will not be offended. Yes, yes, it's not just for young people. Anyone can make bracelets back there. And I know that some people listen better when they're doing things with their fingers. So like, I really, like, go for it. The book we are reading today is called Enemy Pie. Sounds good. Yeah. Enemy Pie. Enemy Pie. It should have been a perfect summer. My dad helped me build a treehouse in our backyard. It's funny because my dad just helped me do that just last year. My sister was at camp for 3 whole weeks, and I was on the best baseball team in town. It should have been a perfect summer, but it wasn't. It was all good until Jeremy Ross moved into the neighborhood, right next door to my best friend Stanley. I did not like Jeremy Ross. He laughed at me when he struck me out in a baseball game. He had a party on his trampoline and I wasn't even invited, but my best friend Stanley was. Jeremy Ross was the one and only person on my enemy list. I didn't even have an enemy list until he moved into the neighborhood. But as soon as Jeremy Ross came along, I needed one. I hung it up in my treehouse where Jeremy Ross was not allowed to go. Thanks. Dad understood stuff like enemies. He told me that when he was my age, he had enemies too, but he knew a way to get rid of them. I asked him to tell me how. Tell you how? I'll show you how, he said. He pulled out a really old recipe book off the kitchen shelf. Inside, there was a worn-out scrap of paper with faded writing. Dad held it up and squinted at it. Enemy pie, he said, satisfied. You may be wondering what exactly is in enemy pie. I was wondering too, but my dad said the recipe was so secret he couldn't even tell me. I decided it must be magic. I begged him to tell me something, anything. I will tell you this, he said, enemy pie is the fastest known way to get rid of enemies. Now, of course, this got my mind working. What kind of things, disgusting things, would I put into a pie for an enemy? I brought Dad some weeds from the garden, but he just shook his head. I brought him earthworms and rocks, but he didn't think he needed those. I gave him the gum I'd been chewing all morning. He gave it right back to me. I went out to play alone, and I shot some baskets until the ball got stuck on the roof. I threw a boomerang that never came back. All the while, I listened to the sounds of my dad clopping and stirring and chopping and blending in the ingredients of enemy pie. This could be a great summer after all. Enemy pie was going to be awful. I tried to imagine how horrible and the smell, or worse yet, what it would look like. But when I was in the backyard looking for ladybugs, I smelled something really, really, really good. And as far as I could tell, it was coming from our kitchen. I was a bit confused. I went in to ask Dad what was wrong. Enemy pie shouldn't smell this good, but Dad was smart. If enemy pie smelled bad, your enemy would never eat it, he said. I could tell he'd made enemy pie before. The buzzer rang, and Dad put on his oven mitts and pulled the pie out of the oven. It looked like plain old pie. It looked good enough to eat. I was catching on. But still, I wasn't really sure how this enemy pie worked. What exactly did it do to enemies? Maybe it made their hair fall out or their breath stinky. Maybe it made bullies cry. I asked Dad, but he was no help. He wouldn't tell me a thing. While the pie cooled, he filled me in on my job. He talked quietly. There's one part of enemy pie that I can't do. In order for it to work, you need to spend a day with your enemy. Even worse, you have to be nice to him. It's not easy, but that's the only way the enemy pie can work. Are you sure you want to go through with this? Of course I was. It sounded horrible. I was scared, but it was worth a try. All I had to do was spend one day with Jeremy Ross, then he'd be out of my hair for the rest of my life. I rode my bike to his house and knocked on the door. When Jeremy opened the door, he seemed surprised. He stood on the other side of the screen door and looked at me, waiting for me to say something. I was nervous. "Can I play?" I asked. He looked confused. I'll go and ask my mom," he said. He came back with his shoes in his hand. His mom walked around the corner to say hello. "You boys stay out of trouble," she said, smiling. We rode bikes for a while and played on the trampoline. Then we made some water balloons and threw them at the neighborhood girls. But we missed. Jeremy's mom made us lunch, and after lunch, we went over to my house. It was strange, but I was kind of having fun with my enemy. He almost seemed nice. But of course, I couldn't tell Dad that, since he had worked so hard to make the enemy pie. Jeremy Ross liked my basketball hoop. He said he wished he had a basketball hoop, but they didn't have room for one. I let him win a game just to be nice. Jeremy Ross knew how to throw a boomerang. He threw it, and it came right back to him. I threw it, and it went over my house and into the backyard. When we climbed over the fence to find it, the first thing Jeremy noticed was my treehouse. My treehouse was my treehouse. I was the boss. If my sister wanted in, I didn't have to let her. If my dad wanted in, I didn't have to let him. And if Jeremy Ross wanted in, "Can we go in it?" he asked. I knew he was going to ask me that, but he was the top person, the only person on my enemy list. And enemies aren't allowed in treehouses. But he did teach me to throw a boomerang, and he did have me over for lunch, and he did let me play on his trampoline. He wasn't being a very good enemy. "Okay," I said, "but hold on." I climbed up ahead of him and tore the enemy list off the wall. I had a checkerboard and some cards in the treehouse, and we played games until my dad called us down for dinner. We pretended we didn't hear him, and when he came out to get us, we tried to hide from him, but somehow he found us. Dad made us macaroni and cheese for dinner, my favorite. It was Jeremy's favorite, too. Maybe Jeremy wasn't so bad after all. I was beginning to think that maybe we should just forget about enemy pie. But sure enough, after dinner, Dad brought out the pie. I watched as he cut the pie into 8 thick slices. "Dad," I said, "it sure is nice having a new friend in the neighborhood." I was trying to get his attention and trying to tell him that Jeremy Ross was no longer my enemy. But Dad only smiled and nodded. I think he thought I was just pretending. Uh-oh. Dad dished up 3 plates side by side with big pieces of pie and giant scoops of ice cream. He passed one to me and one to Jeremy. "Wow," Jeremy said, looking at the pie, "my dad never makes pie like this." It was at this point that I panicked. I didn't want Jeremy to eat enemy pie. He was my friend. I couldn't let him eat it. "Jeremy, don't eat it. It's bad pie. I think it's poisonous or something." Jeremy's fork stopped before reaching his mouth. He crumpled his eyebrows up and looked at me funny. I felt relieved. I had saved his life. I was a hero. "If it's so bad," Jeremy asked them, "why has your dad already eaten half of it?" I turned to look at my dad. Sure enough, he was eating enemy pie. "Good stuff," he mumbled through a mouthful, and that was all he said. I sat there watching them eat enemy pie for a few seconds. Dad was laughing. Jeremy was happily eating, and neither of them was losing any hair. It seemed safe enough, so I took a tiny taste. Enemy pie was delicious. After dessert, Jeremy rode his bike home, but not before inviting me over to play on his trampoline in the morning. He said he'd teach me how to flip. As for enemy pie, I still don't know how to make it. I still wonder if enemies really do hate it, or if their hair falls out or their breath turns bad, but I don't know if I'll ever get an answer, because I just lost my best enemy. And that's the end of the story. And remember, I'm going to talk about this a little bit, and you can stay here, you can sit in the front row, you can go with your families, you can make bracelets, whatever you want to do, it's okay. And here are my questions for you, for everyone. Did you get what happened in that book? I mean, like, you heard what happened, but like, what was the trick there? Did anyone know what was the trick? Did enemy pie really get rid of enemies? We made them friends. Oh my God, that's it. Yes. I mean, right, there was a trick. Jeremy Ross wasn't banished. His hair didn't fall out. His breath didn't smell bad. But by the end of the story, there's no longer an enemy. So the pie really did work in a sense, right? It worked. It got rid of the enemy. Well, in addition to what his dad said had to happen, right? He had to spend an entire day with his enemy, pretending to be nice, pretending that Jeremy Ross was his friend. So maybe it wasn't just the pie. Right? We know the trick. We can see what happened even if the main character is ignorant of what happened. By spending an entire day with someone, pretending to be their friend, pretending to be nice, it happened. They became friends. And that's the thing about friends, right? Most of friendship is being with someone and being open to friendship happening. His dad tricked him into being open to that connection, sharing what he liked, sharing what he wanted to do. I mean, here's I feel a little bit like a sort of self-help. Do you know how to make people like you and how to get rid of enemies and gain friends? I guess one two-step process. Anyone can make friends. It's you be yourself and you treat people kindly and as if they were already your friend. Okay, great. That's easy to say, right? Just be yourself. Just treat people like they're your friend. Okay, that's easy enough. Done. Well, it takes work, right? It takes work. It takes vulnerability. I mean, what if you don't like the same things as me? What if you don't like the way I dress or the music I listen to? Like, what if I don't like the way you dress or I don't like the music you listen to? Right? It goes both ways. Right? That's where the work comes in. And sometimes friendships can be as easy as jumping on a trampoline and eating pie. But after that initial connection, usually there's more. And I have a question for those making bracelets and for everyone else. Does anyone know the song often sung by Girl Scouts? But not just Girl Scouts, but make new friends, but keep the old. One is Sylvie and the other gold. It keeps going. I mean, there are more verses. Oh. Indy sings it all the time in all our groups. Yes. So make new friends, but keep the old. One is silver and the other gold. Silver and gold are both precious metals, right? We know what the analogy here is. So we're saying that those who are already our friends, who are already close to, are very precious. And those people who we are not friends with yet are also precious to us. Check this out. You might actually be sitting in the same room as your next best friend. You don't know, right? Make new friends, but keep the old. And the reason I mention this is not just because we can sing the song together. I was actually going to pull up a video, but it's a little repetitive. It's, we don't need to, we got that. But that both gold and silver, they're precious, but both gold and silver need work. Gold is soft. It can dent easily. It benefits from regular polishing, right? If I wear this when I'm doing something very physical, I will dent my ring. I could bend it, misshape it. I have to be careful with that. Silver, if you have any silver, especially silverware, it needs to be clean. It tarnishes over time, just from contact with the air. So I keep this analogy going. Yes, there are precious metals, just like friends, need maintenance, need care. If I treat my jewelry without care, it will get damaged. If I treat my friendships without care, they too will get damaged. That care for friendship is vulnerability. Being true to ourselves and allowing others the space to be true to themselves also. And this is where the main character in Jeremy, he set up a wall when he said, he's my enemy. Then we said, oh, be kind to him for a day. He was letting that wall down, letting some vulnerability and some openness. That's our friendship sort of polish to get rid of the tarnish, is regular contact, is sharing from our lives and hearing from others what is shared. And there are many, many specific ways we can be good friends, from making friendship bracelets for people we care about, to baking pie. If anyone wants to bake me a pie, that's great. From jumping on trampolines to sharing a coffee break. I'd love to grab coffee or tea with people too. But each task in making or sustaining a friendship entails bringing a part of ourselves and opening up, being vulnerable and allowing space for someone else to be vulnerable. Now I'd like to let us think about that, being vulnerable, as we contemplate and listen to a song about being vulnerable by Selena Gomez. I go contemporary here.
Give you every piece of me, I know that you could drop it. Give you the chance, I know that you could take advantage, would you cut it? If I open my mind up to you, I know that you could lock it. Throw away the key, keep it down forever in your pocket.
This the time right now, this is our embodied faith. This is where we stay vulnerable. is that the fact that each week we set a special time to be vulnerable. We know the importance of sharing, the importance of bringing forward the highs and the lows which come pouring out of our lives. And we know the importance of hearing each other and seeing each other. If you feel so moved, I invite you now to come forward and share briefly a joy or a sorrow from your life. If you are online, you may virtually or physically wave your hand, and our tech team will get you settled. Thank you all for sharing. We have a sung response, which is different from what we usually do. This one is, "How Could Anyone?" We've had this before here. This is a repetitive song, which is meant to be a meditative, repetitive song. It has the lyrics up here. It goes through 5 times. If that's too much for you, then just sing a couple and then drop out, or just keep on going. Let the song wash over you. How could anyone?
How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul.
Please pray with me. May we have the courage to open ourselves to the pleasures and wounds of life. May we have the strength to be open and honest with ourselves and others, even when it is difficult. May we have the wisdom to understand that when we travel through the midst of uncertainty, openness and vulnerability make it more possible to find a way through that mist. To be open and vulnerable is to be alive. Amen. Our second, we sort of have two portions of this service, and I don't have another story for you, but I have a video for you this time. This is from Brené Brown, who's a well-known, I don't even know what title to use. She really delves into vulnerability, shame, and guilt. Like, this is her study topic, and she has this great video that was animated from a TED talk of hers about empathy.
So what is empathy, and why is it very different than sympathy? Empathy fuels connection. Sympathy drives disconnection. Empathy, it's very interesting. Teresa Wiseman is a nursing scholar who studied professions, very diverse professions where empathy is relevant, and came up with four qualities of empathy. Perspective taking, the ability to take the perspective of another person or recognize their perspective as their truth. Staying out of judgment, not easy when you enjoy it as much as most of us do. Recognizing emotion in other people and then communicating that. Empathy is feeling with people. And to me, I always think of empathy as this kind of sacred space when someone's kind of in a deep hole and they shout out from the bottom and they say, I'm stuck, it's dark, I'm overwhelmed. And then we look and we say, hey, calm down. I know what it's like down here, and you're not alone. Sympathy is, ooh, it's bad, uh-huh. No, you want a sandwich? Empathy is a choice, and it's a vulnerable choice, because in order to connect with you, I have to connect with something in myself that knows that feeling. Rarely, if ever, does an empathic response begin with at least. And we do it all the time. Because you know what? Someone just shared something with us that's incredibly painful, and we're trying to silver lining it. I don't think that's a verb, but I'm using it as one. We're trying to put the silver lining around it. So, I had a miscarriage. Oh, at least you know you can get pregnant. I think my marriage is falling apart. At least you have a marriage. John's getting kicked out of school. At least Sarah is an A student. But one of the things we do sometimes in the face of very difficult conversations is we try to make things better. If I share something with you that's very difficult, I'd rather you say, I don't even know what to say right now. I'm just so glad you told me. Because the truth is, rarely can a response make something better. What makes something better is connection.
So if the first part of the service was like the intro to an intro course, we've now entered friendship level 200 or maybe more. So I'm still talking about how to be a good friend. But what about when someone shares something really, really vulnerable, really, really deep and heartfelt? The response is to meet that vulnerability with our own vulnerability. When things go poorly, we come down into that sacred space. I love that image. It's a sacred space of that deep, dark hole. We go down with someone and we sustain our connection. It isn't easy, doesn't feel comfortable, but it's the way to maintain that connection. Remember the difference between empathy and sympathy. On the one side, I enter that sad space with you. On the other side, I say, yeah, sounds tough. Want a sandwich? Brené Brown says, in order to connect with you, I have to connect with something in myself that knows that feeling. That's the vulnerable. That's the caring, empathetic response. My connection with my own pain, with my own loss, with my own confusion and anger. That's all coming back to being vulnerable with care. We know this to be true. We know this to be true. This isn't new. It's just we have to be reminded. Just that we know that spending time with someone and being kind to them will help create friendship. When we are in pain, we know that it's the connection that matters and not the content. But even still, when another's in pain and we try to say the right thing, we try to heal that wound, we're like, oh, if I just knew what to say. But that's the sympathetic and the less than vulnerable response. The response, the vulnerable response, the empathetic response is to name exactly what we are feeling and thinking. Wow, that sounds really, really awful and hard. I don't even know what to say. Thank you for sharing and staying. In my ministerial training, I served as a chaplain at a children's hospital in Texas. And I saw the power of presence. I mean, you can imagine in a children's hospital that the highs and lows were extremely high and extremely low. And I saw this time and time again. At a time of loss, family members would come in to console, to say something, and then look sort of pained or awkward and leave the room. Because it's so hard to be with someone we're in that sacred, deep, dark space. It's so hard. The ministry I brought wasn't anything amazing other than being present with people. Being with someone, maybe praying, maybe listening to them, maybe sitting in silence. There are never right words to say. Never right words to say. Rarely can a response make something better. What makes something better is the connection. This is how to be a good friend, 200 level. Or maybe this is the master's course. This goes pretty deep. Remember that connections are what matter, not the perfect present, not the most beautiful friendship bracelet. But the thought of making a bracelet, the fact that a present meant you were on my mind, the space and time that we have together, in the bad and in the good. For all of life, there will be bad and there will be good. That's guaranteed. It's just what we do with each other in those times. It's our friends who will stay with us. And it's those who are our friends who we will stay with in the good and the bad. So for all of life, we say thank you to life, to ourselves, to our friends. Amen and amen. And let us sing to all that is life with this wonderful song, Let It Be a Dance We Do. Though you may rise in spirit and or in body.
This dance with you through the good times and the bad times too. Let it be a dance. Let a dancing song be heard. Play the music, say the word, and fill the sky with sailing. Dark there.
At the end of our service, we extinguish these flames, but not the hope and the faith that they symbolize. May the lights we end here continue to live on in our minds, in our hearts, and in our souls. As we go, may we remember that we were never meant to make it through this life alone. Vulnerability is a doorway, friends. These wounded and tender pieces of ourselves help us return to each other, what seems wounded or unworthy, when shared, becomes our strength. Amen and blessed be.